Hello and welcome. This is the Women in Action Sports Network Conversation Space. I am Alba Pardo and today we're speaking with Gina Cerejo. Following her passion for snowboarding and mountain life, at the age of 29, Gina left her office job and home in the UK for a position in the tourism industry, working as a resort manager for a leading tour operator across France, Italy, and her now hometown of Meierhofen in Austria. In 2020, as the pandemic spread far and wide, the tourism industry was put on hold, and like many others, Gina found herself locked down and unemployed. With this newfound abundance of time, Gina decided to learn new skills, such as website building, creative writing, social media, and marketing. It wasn't long before these new experiences inspired her new project, to create and host a podcast showcasing that inspiring stories, insightful advice, and top tips of people who live and work abroad from their native countries. After spending time in early 2021 learning the various aspects of how to make a podcast, on the 6th of April 2021, Gina released her first episode of the show That Season Air podcast. Having released a full season comprising 10 episodes and with over now 4,000 listens, Gina is now working on the production of season 2 that's already on the way of her popular show. Losing today with Gina, we speak about losing a job, a breakup, an illness, or even a global pandemic, how these things are often listed as reasons to take a leap, change your career path, and start something new. Gina, the voice behind That Season Air podcast, tells us her journey and not only moving abroad and starting fresh, but showcasing the stories of all of those others that are doing the same thing. The most empowering moment of this conversation comes when Gina explains that you can basically learn and do anything you want to. Without further ado, let's please welcome Gina Cerejo. Well, hello everyone, and thank you, Gina, for joining us today for this session for the Women in Action Sports Network. Gina, talk a bit about who you are. Where do you come from?
Okay, so my name is Gina Cerejo, and I come from the UK. I come from England.
But you're now in Austria.
Now in Austria, yeah. I have been doing season work for the past sort of 8 or 9 years and ended up in the mountains of Austria.
Right.
So I'm currently living.
Tell me a bit about it. How do you go from being in the UK to ending up in Austria? What makes you want to jump in a season kind of job?
So for me, it was quite a lot of factors went into it, to be honest. I had gone through quite a big breakup, actually. And I had the house. I had a mortgage, a house, bought a house, had the dog, everything, and that all kind of fell apart. And I was working a full-time job in an office back home, in a local government office, the council offices. And I didn't enjoy it. I wasn't loving it. And then I had this breakup and just needed a change. And yeah, just went from there, really. Basically, I went on a holiday, as you do after a breakup, went on a snowboarding holiday, and then fell in love with the sport. And one of my friends was like, why don't you just go and do a season? So I did, so made that happen. Luckily, I had the support of my boss at the time, who let me have a sabbatical. So I got a job as a holiday rep, and I went across to France. Was my first season. So I went over and did a ski season in Mirabel in France.
Mm-hmm.
The rest is history. I just kind of...
That's a nice place. So yeah, when do you embark into a season? Do you actually plan just to be for a short amount of time, or you actually just go? What do you understand for a season?
Okay, so yeah, I knew that the winter season, I mean, I didn't actually know very much about it at all before I went into it, and I was absolutely rubbish at snowboarding. So at this point, I was just like, I just need to get out of the UK. I don't want to stay in this job. I'm just going to go. So bought a snowboard and went. And at that point, I'd done a little bit of research. I'd got the job as well, so I went through quite a hefty interview process, and they, at that point, were making sure I did know what it was all about, and that is basically, you know, between 4 and 6 months to a particular season job. And my job as holiday rep was 5 months, usually on average.
Yeah.
So I knew it was just the winter season. And at that point in time, I had decided to just do the one and try it and go for this, because obviously my boss has given me the sabbatical. So I was supposed to go back to work, which I did do, actually. I did do that after that winter. But I had it in my head that it was going to be one season, and I was going to go snowboard and have a good time and learn something new. And yeah, that was my kind of idea behind it, was just to do something completely different and get out of my comfort zone.
But you went from a season to actually being your life, so it's not so much of a season now, is it? It's like the whole year round kind of thing.
It happens to a lot of us, yeah. So yeah, I mean, I can tell you a bit about how that happened. If you
mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Okay, so at the end of that first winter in France, I returned back to my job, to my office job, and I actually went for another job there, and I didn't get it, and I think my boss felt a bit guilty, so he gave me a second sabbatical. He was a snowboarder, so he was pretty understanding.
So he understood what he meant.
I think he felt a bit guilty, because I'd been there for a good 12 or 13 years, something like that, in this job, and obviously didn't get this job that I went for. And he was like, the company wanted me back for a second year, and the ski season company, and he said, you can go again, and we'll let you have your job in the summer again if you want, you know, you come back to it, and then you know you can't have another one after that, but then you come back to your job and you've done these two seasons, and sorted. So I was like, well, I can't really say no to that opportunity. And then the company that I worked for, the tour operator that I worked for, they didn't have the France program anymore. They certainly didn't have a rep program in Mirabel. So they said, we've got two options. You can go to Sol in Austria, or you can go to Meierhofen in Austria. So I looked up both places, and I'd never been to Austria before at all. I had no idea what it was like at all. And I just looked up the two places, and I saw that Meierhofen had a festival called Snowbombing. And I was like, really into my music, and I was like, okay, seems like, yeah, the place to go. And that was it. I just came to Meierhofen, and yeah, pretty much been here every winter ever since. I then went on to do summer season work. I went back to my job in the UK in the office, and then the opportunity came up that winter to do another season for the same company. They wanted me to come back to Meierhofen, and I wanted to do it, but I knew that I wouldn't be able to have another sabbatical. So I just made that happen. Well, I just quit my job in the end. I said no about 3 times to the company, and they were like, you sure, last chance? And I was just like, life's too short for this, I'm going. So I quit my job. Came out to Meierhofen again. And then in the summer of that, after that winter, the tour operator offered me a position as a summer rep in Lake Garda in Italy.
Nice.
So that was a whole new experience altogether.
Yeah. So you've been changing from winter season to summer season. Actually having winter, summer, winter, summer. Is it still the case, or you're now in Austria permanently?
It is. Well, because of COVID, it's all been a bit up and down, really. So we don't really know what's happening with tourism. I am currently on furlough, actually, from the company that I work for. It's top, like they're an Irish tour operator, actually.
Right.
And they put me on furlough because last summer I was due to go back to Lake Garda again in Italy, but it obviously didn't happen because of the pandemic.
Yeah, it's so all a bit mixed up.
Yeah, so at the moment I'm just waiting it out to see what happens, and if they want me to go to to Garda, then I can still do that. It just depends on the whole
COVID.
Travel everything that goes on, because I actually do really enjoy that job. It's really cool. It's really nice to have the, you know, to be able to do summers and winters.
Yeah, that's, I wanted to go back there to the season kind of lifestyle. Do you feel like it's a choice of doing that, committing to that lifestyle? You know, there's, you can do everything. There's a lot of people that find comfort on having the 9 to 5 and that stability. But then when you want to have the season air, or having this experience of summer, winter, working somewhere else in something you really enjoy, it's a commitment. And there's good sides about it, but there's also bad sides about it. And probably now with COVID, it's even more obvious than ever that this, you know, when you commit to a season, a season's lifestyle, there's these up and downs, and there's always the next chapter. You don't know what's going to happen, the uncertainty of what's next. How has your experience been through that? I mean, you said you had to quit your job to really commit to this season year.
That's it. I mean, there's everyone's sort of decision to do this. There's many different ways to do it. You don't have to do it all your life if you don't want to. You can, you know, go to do one season, then go home and go back to your normal job. It's not something that has to be a career choice. So anyone can do it. You just have to be willing to perhaps think about what you're going to do when you're not doing it. That's basically it. So you can pick it up and put it down at any point. For me, it was more like, I don't want to do anything else other than live abroad, really. And I enjoyed moving every 6 months and having that change, you know, because it'd be a different set of customers or a different set of people you meet in a different country. And I have like a community in Italy and a community here, which I was going in between. So life was never boring. And so for me, that was the main kind of reason for doing it. It's just, I get a little bit bored being in one place for too long, if you like. Now I'm getting a bit older, I'm starting to feel like, am I ready to go back to that life of perhaps just staying in one place all the time? But yeah, we'll see what happens when that actually comes up.
What's the biggest downside for you of a seasonier lifestyle?
So the biggest downside is definitely missing things back home, such as I had some friends got married a few years ago, and it was more due to the nature of my job, actually. It wasn't so much doing seasons, because I'm sure in other jobs you'll be able to have a week off here and there, and you know, you can make it work how you want to depending on what you do. But my commitment as a rep and my contract meant I couldn't go home for that particular wedding. So that was really tough, and that's happened a few times with different things. You know, my best friend had baby back home and things like that, and I haven't been able to be there when, you know, when they're still little babies. And yeah, just little things like that, really. Christmas, well, not little things, big things. But like going home for Christmas, I haven't been home for Christmas for years, for 8 or 9 years, I'd say. So it's just, those are the things of like friends and family back home. You do miss them, of course. And you do miss those events from time to time, because you can't always get back to all of them.
Do you still call home back in the UK? Do you feel like home is wherever you are at any point, or because you're moving so much, it's hard to establish home elsewhere?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. I think I do feel at home kind of wherever I am. That is part of it. But if someone said to me, where do you feel like in your heart, where is home? It would be Austria. I can't tell you why. It just is. Like here in Meyerhofen, it feels like a real family unit of friends, and I just love the mountains. Yeah, love the lifestyle here. I've got a community of friends, like I say, at Lake Garda as well, and when I'm there, that feels like home. But if someone said to me, and I love the sun, love the lake, love the Italian culture and the way of life there, everything, but for some reason my husband takes it every time. It's home to me for sure. I say home in the UK, I call that home, just because I don't really know why. I can't tell you. It's not,
it's, I guess, not the really family is the anchor anymore, isn't it?
That's it. Well, most of my family aren't there. There's only a few of them left there. My mum lives in France, my brother lives in France, I've got two sisters in the UK, so it's just where you're brought up.
It's the way you speak. That's a funny the funny concept, also because now you're becoming somewhat of a seasonier expert, and if not through your own experience, which of course as well helps, also through other people's experiences. Tell me, so I gather that, you know, with COVID everything shuts down and you find yourself with a lot of time in your hands and you decide to start something. I was telling to you earlier, when I'm bored, I watch Netflix. I don't start a big major project. What made you want to start this? What made you want to say, okay, I'm going to use downtime to inspire people?
That's a really good question as well. What was that? It was... it was the amount of time that I had on my hands, but I think really that whole mindset started maybe a couple of years ago. I don't know if you heard episode 4 with John Weaver. He was saying that while he was on Seasons, he started to feel like his brain was going bad. He literally used those words, and that is how I felt a couple of years ago. And I started looking for things to, you know, you kind of look for things to learn or new influences, new information, because I hadn't been in education for years and years and years, and hadn't really done any progression for years. You know, just enjoying snowboarding, enjoying the lifestyle here, enjoying being in another country, but still doing the same job, and it kind of was getting a bit normal, and I didn't feel like I was progressing in anything particularly. So I started watching TED Talks at the time. I started watching TED Talks, and it just little bits of information was sort of trickling in. And then I got really sick at the beginning of the pandemic here, actually. I got really sick. I had COVID, and I ended up in hospital for 5 days with pneumonia. So I actually had the secondary condition, pneumonia. And after I got out of hospital, when I was in hospital, a friend of mine, I was so, you know, on my own and just a weird situation, couldn't really focus on Netflix or anything like that. And someone said to me, you should listen to this podcast. So I did. And I'd never listened to a podcast before until 2020. And I listened to this podcast and came out of hospital, got better. And then I started hiking every day to like get my lungs back to normal and listen to podcasts over and over and over again. And so, I started listening to a podcast called Entrepreneurs on Fire.
Oh.
And on there was all these guests who were like really successful entrepreneurs. And it just all went into my brain as I'm hiking along. And then during that year, I just started having way more motivation. And I was surrounded by a group of friends who I actually moved in with, friends from here who I just knew through season work over the years. I moved in with them and they were really positive influences and really positive people. And so they encouraged me to start a blog. So I did. I started a blog. It wasn't particularly a successful venture, but it was something that I had to learn. And so from there, it just kind of spiraled into something else. I got this love for podcasts and I just kept listening to them, and one day I just sat in the kitchen with them after having done the blog and I just went, I'm gonna make a podcast. And they were like, yeah, do it. All right. So as I had done with the blog, I went online, researched it all, and it was a lot easier to do that with the pandemic happening and having so much time, of course, and with the pandemic being the only thing in the news at that point. There wasn't much coming in from the outside world to kind of take my mind elsewhere. So I was like super focused and I was just like, I'm just going to do it and figure it out and then see if it works. And yeah, so I just got on YouTube.
Was your blog already on the same sort of topics that you're tackling on the podcast, or was it completely different?
It's completely different. It was about sort of life and just things that kind of come up in my head.
Okay.
There was a post about vegans. Hmm. And about how people always give vegans a hard time. I'm not a vegan, but I just had a little rant about it on the blog. there was a post about how I turned the telly off one day and started doing work and started working, you know, pushing forward and progressing myself in the pandemic. There's one about heartache and things like that. So it was more of a, I don't know, agony aunt type thing. I don't really know what it was, but I just felt the need to start writing and being creative, and it just happened. So I did that, and that led on to, and obviously with that I learned some skills that have gone into this, because I was learning about social media and marketing a bit and things like that, so trying to market that. Learned skills on Canva and programs like that for like the visual side of things. So yeah, it just progressed from there really, and then I was surrounded by really positive, encouraging people, and one thing led to another, and bought some gear and set it up and started going.
I feel like a lot of us have through this 2020, if we weren't really adept to podcasting or to listening to some podcasts, a lot of us have started that just because that loneliness and that sort of seclusion, aside from people, and yes, you watch Netflix, you watch the news, but you kind of get tired of it. So podcasting has been a really powerful connection, you know. And then things like Clubhouse come up, and now Beams, and it's sort of this conversation happening that I think it's kept us connected somehow, and our brains active a little bit. So I think that kind of makes sense. And before we get into the topics of what you actually and your guests and who you talk to and what you've actually learned, what other things, you know, we all know what a podcast is and we've all heard about it. But I feel like it's one of those things that a lot of prep goes into it and you don't see it. So what are the things that we don't know about that go into podcasting that you've had to learn the hard way?
I actually don't know where to begin.
So is that long the list?
For me, I've never done anything like this before, so it was a learning curve. The only thing that I can say is relatively close was the blogging, and that's because I had to make a website and, you know, do the visual side of things, you know, creating posts and things like that. So similarly to that, well, that's pretty much the only similarity. But straight from scratch, it was really intimidating. But I just got on YouTube and carried it on and did as many tutorials and things like that. But the things that you don't really see are things like editing. I edit my podcast. You can do a podcast without editing it. But because I've never been an interviewer before, I've never even interviewed someone for a job. I had to learn that. I had to learn about storytelling. I had to learn how to edit because, as I say, my interviews weren't very good. And the editing process is absolutely massive. It takes a very, very long time. It takes me a few days to edit 3 hours of audio down to whatever size the episode is. So it's massive.
Wow.
And of course, with that came, you know, I had to learn about the actual audio software and things like that and the equipment and all this stuff. So yeah, I mean, there's so much that goes into it. And then obviously you've got to market it and try and figure out how to get people to listen to it, because it's brand new. Figure out how to get it on Spotify and how to, all these things. Ugh, there's so much that goes into it. That's why it's every 2 weeks and not every week, I wouldn't be able to do it. Because it's just me. I mean, one day hopefully it'll be a bit more frequent, but there's a lot that goes into it behind the scenes for sure.
Can you make any money out of making a podcast?
I mean, I'm not at the moment. that is the goal. you can make money out of podcasting for sure. That is the plan for the future. You can do things like get affiliates on board, which I hope to at some point, sponsorships, you know, people or businesses pay for sponsorship for the podcast depending on how many listens you have. And yeah, there's all sorts of ways to monetize it, but like I say, because I'm so new at the moment, I'm just trying to figure that out. That is the goal at some point, to be able to actually, yeah, to have it as my full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And live off that income.
Yeah,
but we'll see what happens. But hopefully enough people will listen to it. And
yeah. Building that audience. So for what you're saying, you know, there's the technical side of things, there's the storytelling kind of things, there's the marketing side of things, and there's also then the production and the actual doing. What aspect of all of them has been your strongest, or the one that surprises you the most, that like, oh, I don't even know how to begin, and then being a natural at it? And what's been the hardest for you?
Oh, that's a really good question. okay, so all right, what was the first one? So what surprised me that I was...
So what's your strongest suit that you think, oh, well, I had to learn about storytelling, or I had to learn about how to speak on a microphone, or how to approach people? What's been the most, what you've enjoyed the most out of it, maybe?
What I enjoy the most is actually the interview process is fun. I find it really challenging, actually. I find interviewing people absolutely challenging. So well done, you. Great job. But yeah, that's really challenging. But actually telling their story and drawing that information out of them, I really enjoy that. And I enjoy the finished product of the podcast. So once I've when I'm editing, even the editing process can be a bit laborious, to be honest. It takes a long time. You've got to have a lot of patience. But at the end, it's very, very rewarding, because you can see clearly a path of like where someone's come from and to, and how that can help someone who's listening. So it's that's what I think is, it's just like, it just comes out of nowhere in the end, and you spent all this time on it. It's like, it's really quite magical to me.
That's nice.
That, I mean, I'm not sure whether it's a strength, but it's definitely something that, once the episode is complete from start to finish, it makes me very happy and like.
And you have something to show for, isn't it? It's like that thing is like, this is what I've done.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's really rewarding to have that. Okay. Now it's ready for everyone else to listen to. It sounds like a good story.
Now onto the topic. Now onto what you actually talk about in your podcast, and the kind of questions you ask your guests, and how you pick your guests. I can imagine you have quite a lot of interest in people wanting to be part of your podcast. How do you handpick, or let's start from the beginning? What's your selection process, or how do you approach somebody that you want to interview?
So for season one, it was basically all my friends, people I know, because obviously with COVID and everything, we had to just be super careful and do it within the restrictions. So, and also there was the fact of I wanted to do Zoom calls like we are now, but at that point in time, the technology or the all the equipment, it was so foreign to me, so new to me, that I was like, I'm going to keep this as simple as possible. Mm. And if I can get people in a studio, if I can figure out where to have a studio and get people in a studio, it's going to be that little bit easier. So we did that, and I know I'm very lucky to be in abundance of amazing people who do lots of interesting things that I think can help other people and give people inspiration and ideas. So that was basically how it all started. It's like, just asking my mates, like, will you come on and have a chat with me? You know, I know your story, it's pretty cool, come on and have a chat. So so I got everyone, you know, all the people I know in. With season two, actually a couple of the people in season one, John Weaver, I didn't know before actually, and another guy that's going to be coming up, John Marion. John, I didn't know either of them. And so that was cool. I sent John a message on Instagram and I said that he had been nominated by Lauren as well, which is the first episode one, and that I've heard his story and it sounds really interesting. Would he be interested in coming on? And he was just super up for it because he's written this book, The Anti-Blueprint Project, which is kind of, you know, people who are undertaking alternative paths to success or through life. So he was well up for it once he heard the idea of what I'm trying to do. And yeah, I think that's an intimidating part of it, actually, asking people. Because it's never nice to feel like rejection, no. if you like. So it's like, yeah, that was really intimidating. But since putting out the episode, people are listening to it and asking to come on. So, you know, people are listening to it, seeing what I'm doing and think, okay, yeah, I think I can contribute to that and do some good for people. And so and also I've got everyone that comes on, they have to nominate a couple of people.
Ah, that's fun. Mm.
Yeah, so I ask everyone, is there someone that you would like to hear from? And then I'm like, yeah, I'll
nominate their friend. So that helps that process a bit to get it rolling. Because the continuity, I think it's a hard one to achieve. And so talk to me about what you've learned so far. What are your biggest takeaways from the experiences of the people you talk to?
So probably the biggest or most consistent takeaway from everyone so far is that every single person I've interviewed at some point or another took a risk. They all took a risk in one way or another to do further themselves or do seasons or whatever it is. And yeah, that is something that I think is so important as well. I remember when I was a kid, I heard a lot, it's better to be safe than sorry. And in some respects it is, you know. There's a lot of times when you should be safe. However, when it's to do with furthering yourself, I don't agree with that at all. So after listening to all these people, it kind of confirmed that in my mind as well. It's like, wow, like these people took a bet on themselves and it paid off. Imagine if they hadn't. And that comes up a lot. It's like, what would you be doing now if you weren't doing this? It's like, I really don't know. You know, so it's taking the risks and taking a bet on yourself and, you know, not being safe when it comes to what you want to do, dream big and go for it. So, yeah,
wow.
Start.
Yeah. And all of that from people that do seasons, because that's a bit of the main sort of subject, isn't it? And that's all right. We're going back to it. So you pick people that do seasons or that they've had that seasonal lifestyle at some point and go
so it started as seasonaires, so people who go live and work abroad to do season work specifically, but there will be people who are workaways who do that as well, and people who have made the jump to live and work abroad not just seasonally. So there's going to be a few different people, but predominantly people who've gone and done season work and then it's taken them to other paths, basically.
How is that helping you, to talking to all these amazing people? How do you think that's helping you personally? Are you taking their stories internally and sort of using them to progress yourself? Or your goal is to inspire others to do same things, or a bit of both?
A bit of both, really. The goal originally was to inspire others. So the podcast, I made this podcast for anyone who was in a situation like me when I was in my office job and bored and I was staring out of the grey window and wanting to do something different. So I was kind of like thinking of my former life and thinking, if there's anyone out there who's listening, it might inspire them to go and do a season or to follow their dreams in some way, you know, just go for it, start things, go for things. But also it's for seasonaires. And one of the biggest takeaways from it has been other people, other seasonaires messaging me and saying, oh, the podcast is great. And it's really got me like pumped for when, you know, the borders open and I can go elsewhere and we can continue doing these things. And yeah, it's really, you know, sometimes in this, when you're in this position as a seasonaire, you do feel a little bit like you're, you know, there's that societal pressure always kind of, you know, you never think, you think, oh, maybe I should go home and things like, you know, maybe I should be going back to a 9-to-5 in the UK and things like that. And I've had people coming to me and messaging me and saying, yeah, it's kind of validated my decision to do that. And really listening to these other people, I can relate to them. And it's made me see how much I've learned and the opportunities I've had from doing that, and that I know now that I made the right decision to leave my home and leave, you know, that job and things like that. So that was a, that's the massive.
So the response is...
For me personally, it's amazing that, you know, I get to speak to people like Maria Kuzma, the global, she's a friend of mine anyway, but her podcast with me was one of the most inspiring ones I've had, because she said so many things about, you know, what you tell yourself, what your ego tells you, and things like that about, you know, you're not good enough to do this, or you're not, you know. She was like, yeah, you should observe it and see what, you know, what that is telling you. And she was like, that's just not true. All those things that you tell yourself, they're not true. And from her saying that, it's changed so much for me. It's just like, yeah, why do I need something?
So what's the response been in general? Is it been of this support of like, oh, we needed something like this podcast to validate our lifestyle, to validate our decisions? Are they demanding more? Is that feedback affecting the way you're shifting towards creating new content or new interviews or new stories to showcasing them?
Well, at the moment it's still a massive learning curve, so I'm just kind of winging my way through it, if you like. But yeah, the feedback I get, especially when people feedback on particular questions or answers that I've had, I'm like, okay, that the audience likes that, I'm gonna carry on, you know, with that one. But yeah, it will, I mean, there's only 5 episodes out at the moment. I think 6 is coming out tomorrow. So it's really early days to know really what the audience likes and dislikes and things like that. But that is something I'm going to be bringing out in the future, especially on social media, on Instagram and Facebook, is trying to get more interaction from the audience to figure out if there is any other directions they want me to go with it. So at the moment, as it's early days, it's hard to tell, but the response so far has been absolutely amazing. Everyone who writes me is always positive feedback, and just, yeah, it's been incredible. Really, yeah.
Wow, congratulations. It's really well made. And one of the questions that came to mind at first was like, has she done any training on how to speak, or she just got that sweet voice that just captivates you to listen through the whole thing?
Thank you.
No, but it's true. It's like, you first listen to it, it's like, she must have done some training, because when I'm on a call or a Zoom call or a phone interview, I sound like a complete lunatic. So
no, you don't. this is going to sound really weird. So when I was working at the council in my first job, the only training I can think of was like my telephone voice. And also, we had this back in the day of like, when mobile phones weren't as big as they are now. We had a CB radio where we had contacts. I worked in the waste services department and the street cleaning department. So, you know, the general public would phone me up and complain about a bin that needed emptying in a park or something like that. And so I'd have to get on this CB two-way radio and talk to the drivers through the radio. That's really the only time. So I was very aware that everyone who had a radio in their cab could hear me. And I think from there, and I remember being absolutely petrified of using this, because all these guys could hear you, and they'd just like make little comments back, and it was just fine. But you get over it, you know, you just go for it and get over it. But so I had that, and I think that was my first ever experience of talking in front of people. And then when I was a holiday rep slash resort manager, I had to do welcome meetings, and you know, like the microphone on the bus stuff. All that stuff on the microphone. And yeah, so that, I guess that kind of helped in a way, because I was just like used to talking in front of people, talking through a microphone and kind of having to hear my own voice. So yeah, like now when I'm editing and things like that, I don't even really hear my voice at all.
Because that's one of the things to get over is hearing your own voice.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sure. Yeah. How little things in the past, non-related whatsoever, can help you so much into something you do in the future. So you were saying, you know, you've only done a few episodes, but the feedback's been great, and you have all these plans. Where do you see yourself and the podcast in a year and in five? Like, do you think you're ever going to be ready to make the leap that you were talking about before, that risk of just doing that? Would you like to do just that, or a form of it?
So my ultimate dream, I guess, with this is, when I started the podcast, I didn't know what I wanted to do a podcast about. Actually, it was never like, I want to talk about these mares, but I actually didn't even want to be a host. I wanted to be a producer. I was like, okay, I want to make a podcast, but I don't want to host it. I want someone else to talk on it, because who's going to listen to me? But yeah, the goal is to have several podcasts, actually, on various topics at some point. So that's the ultimate goal in the far, far distant future. In the next year, I would like to monetize it in some way, maybe get some sponsors on board, or like I say, affiliates, or figure out some way of trying to enough so that I can do it full time and start making more of them and be a bit more consistent for the audience. I'd also really love, I'm just going to put this out there now, I'd really love to get a van and turn it into a mobile studio.
Do it.
And then go to different places. Different places and interview people on location in resort.
Love that. Gina Mobile. That's amazing. That's a great idea.
I would absolutely love that. But yeah, the long-term goal is to have maybe a network of podcasts and give the opportunity to other people to get involved and have their own podcasts on the network or something like that. Short-term goals, just carry on doing it and make content.
When you say this, there's an obvious question that comes to mind, and it's like, I feel like there's a lot of noise, a lot of stuff happening on the net, on everywhere. There's a lot of information, and I feel like all these podcasting, all this blogging, all these platforms, all this community, it's great, but at the same time, we're adding to this noise, we're adding and a lot of the times it's so hard to filter from what's good to what's not, and when you have a legitimate, you know, product conversation, it's really hard to open that space up and have it featured and being heard and seen. What's your approach on that? Like, you say you want to create a network of podcasts. Like, isn't that scary? Yeah. Of course it is, though. But I mean, how can you, what's your take on it? What do you think we can do to?
For me, the most important thing is, if you're going to do something, make sure it's benefiting others in some way. So like, if you are doing something that just serves you, I don't think it's ever going to be that successful. I don't know, maybe that's a bit of an assumption, I don't know. But I think if you have it in your mind that you've got a way of helping someone else, then that's the way that I want to contribute to that bigger, you know, social network or what's going on in the media. You know, if I can help other people, that's the driving force for it. For me, it's like, yeah, if I can get a message out to people that they can start things, do things, go elsewhere, start a life abroad, and you know, there are things that make it difficult. Brexit, for example, makes it more difficult and things like this, but there's always going to be barriers in your way for everything you ever do. And that is my thought process, is that if I can inspire people to do things they want to do, or help others, then that's the way I want to go about it. And that's how I want my contribution to be in media as well.
Well, that's a very honourable course to have, and we should all be thankful and follow that. I mean, at the end of the day, if you don't do it for that, it doesn't really matter, does it? And hopefully somebody's listening.
Yeah, I just think, yeah, that would be good. But yeah, I just think that is the only way to really have success. Because if you, the thing is, if I had to put this podcast out and only one person, like with my blog, actually, I don't regret doing that, because I had messages from a few people saying, yeah, I really needed to hear that.
Mm.
And I think, well, if I get one message from one person who says I've inspired them or made them feel good about something or brought something positive to their life, then I've already achieved my goal. Mm. And if you do that, and if you put things out in that way with that attitude, you're never going to, it's never going to fail.
Mm.
It might not, you know, it might not go where you want it to go, but it's never going to be,
absolutely
way. It'd be a waste of time.
Mm. I feel like with this conversation there's so many takeaways already that girls starting their projects or people looking for inspiration can get from already. But if you were to give even more tips on someone that maybe wants to start a podcast, but maybe wants to start something else, and as I told you the first time we spoke, I think your biggest values that you've created something out of nothing, and that's an absolute gem and something that we'll have to admire from people like you. That's out there, and I think you're doing a great job, and I think it's really, really brave of you to, at a most vulnerable time and the loneliest of them all, create something and going for it. So maybe not necessarily about starting a podcast, but women that are in this position that there's nothing much to start from, what are your tips to start doing something?
My tips would be, first of all, believe you can do it, because you can. Whatever it is, just start. Just start. That's the first step. Then find something that's similar to what you want to do, and just learn all about it and find out. For example, what I did was I listened to a few different podcasts that I was absolutely hooked on, and I took ideas from each of those and put it into my podcast, like the template, for example, and things like that. Because if someone else is doing it and they're successful at it, it means it works.
Yeah.
And don't think just because someone's done it that you can't do it.
Mm.
There's plenty of room out there. You know, it's a big world, and everyone should just get involved and do those things that they want to do. But yeah, just find something you like. Try and imitate parts of what they've done. Get on YouTube. Find out, you know, get as clued up as you can on that particular subject, on that particular thing you want to do, and just do it. Like, really, just throw yourself into it. It can be hard for people who've got kids and have got other commitments, but just any little bit, you know, turn off the Netflix or turn off this and start enjoying the process of making something for yourself, because you're never going to regret it at all. It, like I said, even if it fails, even if it, you will never regret it, because you will have learned something and you will have bettered yourself in your situation in some way or another to maybe go on to the next thing or whatever it may be. So just, you know, I wanted to start a blog and have a really successful blog.
A stepping stone.
It was a stepping stone, and it, you know, I learned how to build websites on WordPress, and I learned all these other things. So, yeah, if I hadn't have done that, I probably wouldn't have made podcasts. Every single thing is a stepping stone. So just do it. Educate yourself as much as you can. The internet is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, you can learn anything on the internet now, literally anything, for free. So go for it.
Mm.
Go for it.
Well,
start. Take the risk, bet on yourself.
Just do it, just go for it. On that note, Gina, I'd like to thank you very much for this conversation, for your insight, and wish you the best of luck in the journey. Hopefully in a few months in a few years, we're going to interview and talk to you again and again and again, and part of the community so, and, you know, get involved in all these women working in the action sports industry. And now that you're becoming a big part of it. So again, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care.